your words of the watch list name articulation that he was running, I think, Tuesday.
Had no chance Tuesday. That was suicidal what they did with that horse.
He was named it after Tom. He had no chance.
What he's saying is that a horse had just won off an impressive number on the dirt. Next time out, it was on the turf for the first time and went out and opened up 9 on the Lightning. Horse did not belong there. I mean, the guy that claimed it had claimed it for 16, stepped it up to 32. And I encourage you, well, a horse with a good number that has aggressively stepped up in class, and we had one yesterday again, Muy Alegre wins the first race at Hollywood. Horses that have got a good number that are aggressively stepped up in class, you should pay a lot of attention to. Okay, and articulation had been claimed for 16, stepped up to 32, and she won. Then she goes to the turf course. I want to leave you with something on that, and that is, I've never seen it that a horse is equal on the turf and the dirt. I've never seen that. Whether it was John Henry, look at Tight Spot, who just recently got beat for the first time in his life on the turf. He was ordinary on the dirt. Most of those horses are really good one place or really good the other, or it's not equal. So to take a horse that just ran well on the turf, say you've got 8 horses that are moving onto the dirt today, right? There's no, unless you've got races you can go to predict that, it's a questionable race because you don't know what they're going to do when they hit the dirt course. Now, if you're adventurous, go ahead and bet it. I mean, so you catch a loser when it happens. You might get a big prize, too. But what Marion said is absolutely right on. You just can't predict that because they're not as good one surface as they are the other. It just doesn't work that way.
Let me introduce something. Since you've got the horse's mouths here, Tom's and myself, and this is very important for beginners. We'll probably get into it in more detail. I hear, much to my consternation, arguments about ESP, the visual ESP, which Tom stresses, and the energy exertion ESP, which is entirely different, as if they were two conflicting ESPs, and as if one should be taken predominantly over the others. So let's get into the subject of evaluation of ESP from the visual perspective and from the percentage of energy yield perspective. So you will not be confused if this comes up in the main body of the seminar. So first, Tom will explain the viability and the necessity of establishing a visual ESP. Won't you?
What was the question again? They aren't necessarily in conflict as long as you don't make that conflict. The visual ESP, the track profile that I keep is based on how the horse performed in that race in terms of running style. And at Santa Anita, for example, pressers were dominating at the end of the meeting, just dominating. Early pace horses were doing well, too. Deep closers weren't doing anything. Well, the early pace horse that dominated went on to lead. For me, that's an early in that race. And if you check the horse's his background, it might be all early in terms of good races. That's an early horse. But because of the way the horse distributes its energy, you're liable to get a little different call in terms of, it might be early presser or presser in terms of the way the horse distributes its energy. They aren't necessarily in conflict. Because one should be kept away from the other. And one is to basically to establish contenders and who can win. You know, I mean, and if pressers and early were dominating at Santa Anita, you take early and pressers as your contenders, period. And then your model is telling you whether or not their sustained pressers are winning from this program. Okay, they are apples and oranges, but they do have to go together, and there is no argument. But I work from the visual part of it. You know, I mean, if horses are pressing the pace and winning, that's the kind of horse that I'm looking for. But from the model, and the kind of horses I'm betting from the model, I look for whatever it's telling me. And if it's telling me sustained pressers are winning, I'm not going to look for the horse to be visually a sustained presser. I'll look for the way that horse distributes its energy. So is that a conflict to anybody? I mean,
we're going to tell you several examples tonight of this. You might have 4 visual early horses, horses that like to take the lead, or horses that are ready, very, very close to the lead. Okay, who's going to win this race? A horse who is visually early, but who will come up on your K-gen or N-gen as being a sustained presser. You look at his median energy. He's 69. 69 is early, let's say. But he's got the most energy to go along with his visual early. So if you have a lot of early horses, you're looking to see which of those early horses that you've established as being early visually,
which of those are not early on their energy yield, which is an entirely different matter. The horse can be in the lead and be the best sustained horse in the race. And if you have a lot of early horses you want to see, and we'll show you a lot of examples of that in the manuals tonight, they are not. You should absolutely know what Tom knows. You should absolutely, especially, need to lead horses. Yes, sir.
Doc, if you play Maryland, you have to know that because many of your engine sustained horses will go wire to wire.
Surely. Surely they will.
And that's great. The best thing you can find is a visual E in a race with no other visual E's and have that horse labeled presser or sustained. That's wonderful.
See, they're compatible. I was never intended to be an argument. Now, some of our people who are trying to create conflict between Tom and me will say, well, Tom says this and Howard says that. Which one's right? Well, we're both correct. No, there's no right. This is right and wrong are moral values. There is correct and there is incorrect. And when we give you two things from two minds, they are compatible minds. Tom and I are far more compatible in our ultimate thinking than the superficial phraseology might suggest. They both are absolutely essential to your successful handicapping. What is a horse's running style with references to where does he like to be placed in a race? Close up, way back, in the middle. And also, how does he exert his energy? For instance, you've got an early horse. And there's examples in the follow-up. It's a need-to-lead early horse, and he shows early energy distribution. You've got two other relatively close to need-to-lead, and they show sustained presser. Well, they're wipe that horse out. So you need to know both, and you need to know where a horse likes to be placed, like likes to run, where its habit pattern tells it to be, if it can get there. And you also need to know how it exerts its energy. So they're mutually compatible and not mutually exclusive. Any questions on that?
Any other questions, period? Oh, we almost got off the hook. Yes.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
You went, except about 4 years ago, you started doing this full time. Did you ever work on a daily or a weekly basis type of thing and set a specific monetary goal? Or within 21 or 30 races, is this not realistic to do that?
Before I started doing it full time, I was doing it full time anyway. It's just I was working two jobs in effect. So I've been doing it for a long time. Now the last 4 years, I just take it over. Like at Santa Anita, for example, I play for the meeting. I don't play for a week and I don't play for a month. I play for four months, and at the end of the 4 months, that's the universe for me. Was that the question? I mean, I don't take it daily and weekly. I don't think you can. You know, I think the condition at a long meeting, for example, you'll have a couple of changes in the condition cycle. You have a period of a week or 2 weeks that you'll walk around saying, "I can't believe these horses just won today." And what will happen is the horses come to the meeting. The horses will come to a long meeting, and certain horses will be sharp, certain horses will be dull, certain horses will be coming to form. Right. So the first part of the meeting, the horses are sharp. That will dominate this meeting. Then all of a sudden, those horses begin to tail off. Well, you're still betting them unless you're really tuned into condition. And the horses that were in the middle begin to win. So now all of a sudden, they have a lot of favorites going down the crack. Well, then the horses that were really dull early on, now they come into form. And so you'll have a couple of breaks in the middle of a meeting that you can nothing goes right. Well, see, if you're banking your meeting on a daily or a weekly or biweekly process, you can get awfully frustrated with that. So do it. I mean, I would just recommend doing it for a longer period of time. Now, the nice thing about the 20-race cycle, I think that's very important because that's a way you track, especially when you're in the beginning stages, the learner stages. That's a great way to track your... for one thing, the 20-race cycle, when you finish the 20-race, you get to put that behind you and start a new one, maybe, and that'll be better. Okay, and that's fine, because I think that's very important. But after you get to depending on the races for an income of some kind, the 20-race cycle is great, except that the dollar value, the pluses at the end of at the end of that period of time, are far more important than the 20 races. So just take it on a little longer basis. I wouldn't get too short, and I wouldn't let one day bother me too much either. That's the hardest thing everybody's got to get over with. Is one day at the races you had a bad day, right? Well, you had three bets. Maybe one of them fell down, and the other two lost. You know, I mean, maybe you handicapped well, maybe you didn't. But it's not a tragedy. Or if you won all of them, you're not king of the world if you won them all, and you're not scum if you lost them all. And you got to maintain some kind of equilibrium on that. You just can't hit the peaks and the lows off of a single day. And you can't call me and say, I just won nine in a row and I just lost a photo. What in the hell's wrong? Why did I lose that photo? I get calls almost that silly sometimes.
You get
Not that silly, of course. But you get them, and just spread it out and look at it over a longer period of time. Yes?
Now, is there meetings that are easier than others? I know this might sound a little funny. Are there meetings that are easier than others? Because I've read, I think you point your handicapping towards, I think, Anita, when you're meeting, and there's other handicappers that have written that and said that. You know, can you explain to me why that is?
Well, it's a matter of style, and it's a matter of your own. It depends on what you. For me, it's what interrupts the process for me. I every year in June, I go camping for. This year was for 38 days, and went another 12 days a little later. Well, that's during Hollywood Park and Del Mar, right? So I key mine to Santa Anita because of what I want to do later in the year, not because Santa Anita's... In fact, if I were to key one of the two meetings, one of the three meetings locally, the major meetings, if I were to key one for play, it would be Hollywood Park. And it used to always be Santa Anita, but I prefer Hollywood Park these days. But it doesn't work for me calendar-wise. Some people can't play Del Mar. I kind of joined that fraternity this year. I didn't play very well at Del Mar, but, I mean, the only excuse I've got is I wasn't around a lot either. But I didn't play particularly well at Del Mar. In fact, that's an understatement. I didn't play well at Del Mar. But I've played well the whole year everywhere else. I mean, you can take a beating somewhere. But again, if you get too concerned with a short period of time, and Del Mar for me was about a 3 or 4 week, in fact, it was less than that. It was about 3 weeks for me. Well, I can't let that bother me. I can't carry that over to Oak Tree and say, God, what's wrong with me now?
Let me just add something we're going to give you. We are faced with this kind of question. What tracks are best to play? And Marion will tell you Del Mar, and other people say nobody can win at Del Mar. I prefer Long Acres. People tell you nobody can win at Long Acres. We're going to have three presentations by Marion, Bill Robinson, and Bruce Jorgensen from Seattle. And the title of those presentations are the tough-to-beat track or the hard-to-beat track. This is very subjective. Bradshaw wins at tracks where everybody else can't win, and he might eschew Santa Anita. It's subjective. And the only thing I can say is that if you find a track that you don't think you can beat, don't fight it and bet the horses, but damn it, get the racing form for that track until you conquer it. Don't ever go away defeated by a track.
You know, this year it was painful for me to go on vacation because Hollywood was running so well. But they don't. I can't go fly fishing in December up in Mammoth. Yes.
To go along with the other question I asked you about the short term, do you feel if there's anything harmful in your opinion? Let's say that you say, well, I need 300 hours a day or 250 a day from a friend. Do you think there's something wrong that when you hit that goal, you pack up and go home and get ready for the next day?
All right. The question, for those of you who can't hear it, if you have a daily goal, $200, $300, when you hit it, is there anything wrong with packing up and going home? Well, I find that I wind up leaving, if I were to do that, I would wind up leaving too much money on the table. Because if you pack up and go, if you have your 200, because you don't win every day, nobody does. So if you have a $200 day, and that's your goal, and you pack up and go home, and the next day you lose $50, all of a sudden you're not averaging $200 a day anymore. All right, so you've got to stay there and take what's given you. And I never walk away if I've got a couple of plays left in a day, ever. Because tomorrow I may blank. So and the point is that if your goal is $200 a day, it's not $200 every day. It's $200 at the end of a certain period so that you can say, I made $200 a day. Not every day. Some days more, some days a lot less.
I got to add one thing to that. It all depends a lot on your age and on your tension capacity. If after winning 200 or 300, whatever it is, you are so burnt out, you are so exhausted that the racing form starts to blur and you just don't have any feeling that you're going to be able to go on, that's the time to quit, whether you are ahead 200 or 300. But a young man like you, should just continue on. But older people with cardiac problems, really, I would suggest that when you hit a goal, don't push it, because our body is trying to tell us, even some of our most energetic people wear out on occasion, our body is trying to tell us, hey, quit while you're ahead. So you have to pretty well determine that subjectively. See, the one answer that might fit you as a young, healthy, robust man may not fit the gentleman who's 73 years old in the back row. So that has to be something you talk to your body about and your mind. Do you burn out? Do you blur? Do you screw up? Well, test yourself.
Well,
But if you don't do that, don't ever walk away from a good day of handicapping, because
no,
next day you may not be as sharp.
Don't do that.
Don't ever do that.
Don't do it. Don't do it. A lot of times, I've been at the racetrack. I have the book. And it's the third race. I won $700. I hit an exacta or something, and I cashed out $700 or $800 for exacta. And the guy is with me and said, I know you're going home now. Going home for what? When I leave the track after the ninth race, I won $2,500. I mean, I'd be an idiot to leave the track. That is one of those days that's going to take care of the days when I have a bad day. See, so you just gotta stay there and do what you gotta do.
And even if you handicap well every day, the horses don't always cooperate with that.
No.
We have a lady up in Tahoe who has a deep religious conviction, and she feels that when she wins a given amount, with her it's a little less than that because she doesn't need a lot of money. She feels that if she tries for any more, God will punish her. Now this may sound like a joke, but a lot of you have that feeling that the gods are gonna punish me if I get too greedy. So if you have that, don't push the gods.
Yes.
Tom, I think along those same lines, though, if I could address this to Doc for a minute. One of the answers to the question really relates to the fact that you've done your homework before you went to the track. Doc gave us in Oklahoma City the way to bet when you've done that. And so when you walk into the track, you've already bet half of the amount that you intend to bet anyhow.
Yeah, he brought up a good point here. In my particular money management scheme, I have no choice because I bet the ninth race first. We have a lot of people who, if they make a mistake and lose the first race, it screws them up for the rest of the day. As soon as they lose one, they lose their confidence and everything goes. What I do is bet half of my bankroll when I walk in through the ninth race. I like the first and the ninth because they frequently have better payoffs. And I'm committed. So if I go away, I'm still got my bets on those horses. But I do have a supplemented bank that I play by the race for looking for better financial opportunities. But if you commit yourself ahead of time, now a lot of people won't do that. It's peculiar to maybe to me. But I don't care what the horses look like in the paddock, and I don't care what their odds are, because I know that overall, I might get lose money on the race by having the winner. Because he went down in odds. But overall, I've always found that the average mutual is up there where it usually is, by betting ahead of time. So if you tend to burn out in the middle of the day or get worried or want to change your mind or get that palpitation, if you've committed yourself at least for half of your day's bankroll, you're bet through the ninth race. That's what he's talking about.
That's right. From my own standpoint, though, is that I've got my model data with me. And with every winner, I update it. And I'm rolling it back five or six races. And if all of a sudden I get conflicting signals, I won't bet until I've got a feel again. You know, I mean, if I continue to add data to the model that shows it to be still successful, I'll go ahead and play. But if it shows something else, I may convert. I mean, the horse that I walked in the door with, I may wind up betting against. Okay, because all of a sudden the track may have changed. Certainly my handicapping may have changed. So, I mean, it's up to you. I mean, how you handle it. And it's a personal thing. I mean, it's like you said, if you're not having heart palpitations, stay with it until you finish that streak. And if you're having some problems with it, get the hell out. I mean, don't you know, take your money and run, then, if you're having high blood pressure. Yes?
Tom, can you clarify this for me? What do you consider, what's considered to you to be a prime bet or to be an opportune situation that you're willing to bet a decent amount on one horse?
I'm going to think about this because I don't want to give any answers that are just a little off center. I don't want anybody to walk away with anything other than what I want them to walk away with. For me, a key bet for me, or a prime bet for me, will be a horse that is current in its form in a field with horses that are also current, so that you're not fishing for a lot of pace lines. Okay? I mean, you can fit. I put X's down on some of the horses if I'm really not sure of them. If I don't have any more than one of those in a race, then it doesn't really bother me because I can always protect with a Quinella or an Exacta. So, the horse has got to be current. And if I look at it, like one of the ratings that I have found that horses that dominate all three, there are three, I'll show you this program when we look at it, but right now the horses that are dominating, the three factors that are most important to me, and you'll see them all, but if the horses across the board on that, they've been winning they've been winning virtually every time. But on the other hand, if it's choppy, like today's first race, that it was kind of choppy as to the signal, so I bet two horses. I still made it a key bet because they dominated most of the ratings. But when I get a signal that in each category, a different horse surfaces. That is not a key bet, and it may not be a bet at all, because if you're getting all that data. So the horses just got to look, I mean, they could look good as gold without being even money shots. Okay, because I haven't been betting any. I mean, I draw the line at 2-1 these days. I don't even go down as 8-5, so I draw it to 2-1. I won't bet less than 2-1 anymore. And I'm still getting plenty of plays. So, I mean, they can't be that gold-plated. Okay, but it's got to give you whatever data you're keeping, whatever shows you to be good. If the horse dominates, if you've got three categories and the horse dominates all three of them, that's a key bet, as long as those other questions are answered. And if you've gone back and used the pace line 10 back for this horse, 8 back on another horse, 5 back on another horse, a turf line on another horse, turf sprint line on another horse, and one of them comes up on top, that's not a key bet.
Thank you.
Hal?
Yeah, Tommy, your Brewheimer model there, you take an eastern track like Belmont.